Item 1 from the Public Policy Forum presenting a report entitled Pulling Back the Curtain, Assessing the Needs of Major Arts, Cultural, Recreational, and Entertainment Assets in Milwaukee County. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Hinken, welcome. Would you introduce yourself? We're, of course, streaming live, and there are some people out there who may not know who you are.
Thank you. My name is Rob Hinken. I'm the president of the Public Policy Forum.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having me, members of the committee. What I plan to do this morning is run through a series of slides that will do my very best to concisely summarize a 164-page report. The full report is available on our website. I also have distributed the executive summaries to you. But I just wanted to hit on some high points and, again, really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you this morning. So let me start by telling you what this research project was all about. It was commissioned by the Spirit of Milwaukee actually a little more than a year ago. And I think the thinking was that we all saw that there was going to be a renewed conversation in this community regarding the arts and cultural assets and the parks, but in the context, of course, in perhaps a larger conversation surrounding the potential need for a new multi-purpose arena, an expanded convention center, et cetera. So the thinking of both the Spirit of Milwaukee, which commissioned the report, and the Public Policy Forum was we have absolutely no desire to try to steer this debate in any one direction or another. But in our ideal world, we would at least all start with sort of the same vantage point, the same set of factual information, the same general understanding of the conditions of these assets, the way their business models work, where the strengths and weaknesses are. Obviously, there'll be a lot of subjectivity and value in judgments in terms of then deciding where to go from there. So the first question that we asked is how much of any public funding, additional public funding, is needed? That's a question that has obviously been on the table in front of this committee and this county board for several years. We thought that it was an opportune time to take another look at that. We also thought it was an opportune time to expand the conversation. As we looked at other metro regions, we saw that in those metro regions that did employ dedicated public funding sources to support arts and cultural and entertainment assets, often those were not limited to the publicly owned assets. And that was a question that hadn't been asked here. So we wanted to sort of expand the range of that conversation. We wanted to get at the question, if indeed we were going to do something here, and you, of course, tried to do something here in 2008 with a referendum. There was a 1 cent sales tax. The plan at the time was to divvy up the dollars between arts and culture and parks and transit and emergency medical services. At that point in time, there had not been a clear delineation of how those dollars would be allocated among those functions, number one. Number two, there had not been a clear delineation as to whatever of those dollars were segregated for arts, culture, and parks, what the dollar amounts for those functions would be versus the other functions. And furthermore, as I said previously, there had not been a conversation about whether we were only talking about the publicly owned or the whole broad array of arts and cultural assets. So we thought that looking into that question, how have other metro areas that have done something similar made those types of decisions might be instructive to leaders here. Finally, related to what I've just said, again, how have other places dealt with these very similar issues and what can we learn? So those were the fundamental research questions behind the report. 164 pages, obviously, is a lengthy report. We did do our best to limit scope. We ended up refining our research so that actually there will be two reports. The first one that came out in December takes a very thorough look at the Milwaukee County-owned arts and cultural institutions and the Milwaukee County parks from a needs assessment perspective. We certainly did not have the capacity to take a look at the more than 200 additional arts and cultural and entertainment assets and organizations throughout the seven-county region, so we decided to hone in on six. We hope that these six are broadly emblematic in terms of how they operate, how they're structured financially, what types of challenges they face. One of the key criteria that we used in determining these six was whether they either owned or aspired to own their own facilities, because a big part of this analysis was not just the operating side of the equation, but the capital side of the equation. Finally, we took a look at the three major sports and convention facilities, the BMO Harris-Bradley Center, Miller Park, and the Wisconsin Center. We obviously could have gone deeper here as well to look at State Fair and the Pettit Ice Center, et cetera. But again, for the purposes of this analysis and for the scope of this report, we thought it would be instructive to look at the three biggest ones. As I mentioned, there will be a part two. This report will actually be coming out in early to mid-March. We will very specifically explore the funding mechanisms used by Oklahoma City, Pittsburgh, Denver, Cleveland, and St. Louis. We will actually hear a little bit more about this tomorrow. I'm presenting some preliminary findings on that piece to the MMAC task force tomorrow morning. But the full report, again, will be coming out in early March. And the other piece of this is that we will model some approaches. We will take different types of strategies used by different metro areas and say, what if? What if, hypothetically, we were to employ each of those models here? What might that look like? What type of an increased fee or tax would you need, depending on the source that you're using, et cetera? So, again, that will be coming out in about 5 or 6 weeks from now. So let's dig into this report now very briefly. The first 12 pages or so of the report is sort of a snapshot by the forum of our assessment of your latest financial condition. You have seen, and obviously you have heard me, I could spend 164 pages just on your fiscal condition. We did not attempt to do that for this report. What we really wanted to hone in on was how some of the fundamental challenges that you are facing impact your ability to appropriate the dollars that you might want to be able to appropriate in an ideal world to support your arts and cultural institutions and your parks. So, again, about a 12-page analysis, I want to hit on a couple of points. What you see on this slide is your distribution in the 2013 budget of your local revenue. So this is not the full $1.3 billion county budget. This is the property tax and the sales tax revenues and essentially the other revenues that are under your local control. So we wanted to take a look at how those revenues were being divvied up. The reason we wanted to do that is because the starting point, the premise for how this was ideally supposed to work 100 years ago when county governments was formed, was that the mandated functions, those functions that you were to administer as an arm of state government, the jail, the courts, the district attorney's function, much of your health and human services array of functions and activities, ostensibly were supposed to be primarily supported by state and federal revenue streams. As over time, Milwaukee County government took on functions like parks in the 1940s, like transit in the mid-1970s, like the variety of arts and cultural institutions in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the premise was that that's where your locally generated revenue sources were supposed to come into play. Those were supposed to support your discretionary functions and, again, intergovernmental revenue streams supporting those mandated functions. So that's the way it was supposed to work. As we look at your 2013 budget, we, and again, this is just the allocation of your local revenues, we see that the functions that are receiving the bulk of your local revenues are the mandated functions. Parks, Rec, and Culture, only 9% of your local discretionary property and sales tax revenues. The leaders, of course, Judiciary, Criminal Prosecution, Health and Human Services, and the Sheriff. So I think this points to one of the problems, the capacity of the local resources, your property tax in particular, to support the discretionary functions, has been superseded over time by the very fierce cost pressures facing all of your functions across the board, and, of course, the fact that your federal and state revenues have been largely stagnant over time. So this creates an issue for you. We took a look at just another couple highlights, and that's the whole dynamic surrounding your borrowing caps. I was working for the county. I was actually the county board financial analyst back, or fiscal staff person back in 2003, when the county made a very important decision to restructure a significant portion of its long-term debt. At that point in time was when the county first started to experience some extremely fierce operating pressures brought about by the fringe benefit situation and other factors. And so the thinking at the time was, look, we want to be able to avoid draconian cuts in service. We have an opportunity because of low interest rates to refinance the bulk of our long-term debt. In doing so, however, we're going to have to take a little risk. We do want to not only refinance and get better interest rates, we want to push that debt out. One of the things that Milwaukee County has traditionally done best is manage its debt. You're constantly lauded for that by the ratings agencies. You pay down substantial portions of your debt within 10-year time frames, which is the common metric used by the financial ratings agencies. Long story short, the decision was made to do the restructuring, but at the same time, I think there was recognition, and people like me were warning, that if you restructure your debt and if you push it off the way that you're proposing to do to relieve some of the pain you're experiencing in your operating budget, the downside of that is that if you continue to borrow at the rate you've been borrowing, you're going to have an explosion of debt 6, 8, 10, 12 years down the road. So it was that point in time that the county implemented the bonding caps that you're all familiar with. At the time, I think it was about $26 million. By 2008, it was supposed to climb to $30 million and then essentially be able to grow by 2 or 3% a year. So from a financial perspective, I think it was absolutely the prudent thing to do. I think when we look at your overall long-term debt right now, it's not an area of concern for you. I think the problem was that it didn't necessarily square with your needs on the capital side. So at the same time that you were going to be limiting your borrowing, I think there was also a responsibility to take a look at the condition of your assets and whether those $30 million per year or so caps could accommodate your capital needs. I think what we've seen over time is that they couldn't, and so that's been part of the problem. Finally, we do make a distinction in terms of the county-owned cultural assets and organizations between those that operate as county departments and those that operate under the purview of private nonprofit organizations. And this is not to put a value judgment as to whether either one of those is the best model, but it is to say that when you look at the particular operating budget problems faced by the zoo and the parks, those are obviously linked much more and much more directly to the allocation of the health care and pension costs across all functions of county government. So that has had a particular impact on those agencies. So again, these are three points. There's more detail in the report, but three points that we think is important to understanding. This is why the county has been challenged in terms of taking care of these assets and institutions. Let me just describe very briefly, the seven that we looked at, we did not look at everything under your parks, rec, and culture function. We didn't look at the Federated Library System, for example. We didn't look at CAMPAC. We looked at the seven institutions that you see on the screen before you. There are pages of analysis on each one that I'm not going to go over. I just wanted to point out three and just say a few words about three of them. Again, there's detailed analysis of your parks department. You've had your own detailed analysis of your parks department, obviously by Mr. Keegan and the department itself, also by your audit department. Just a few pieces of information that we think are relevant to you to bring before you this morning. We did take a look at the staffing situation at the parks. We came up with an estimate of what it would take to return staffing levels to 2008 levels. My guess is that the chairman would quibble as to whether the staffing levels in 2008 were sufficient. But if that was your policy goal, that would cost you about $3 million extra per year. We took a look at the capital needs that have been cited by the department. This is clearly not the whole inventory of needs, and this is only a five-year snapshot. Right now, we were able to identify about $82.5 million, and just to provide context, that's about $25 million more than had been appropriated over the previous 5 years. And I think what's telling and what's interesting to us as we take a look at where this community is going in terms of the conversations is that there's also a distinction between the types of capital needs faced by different organizations, both public and private. When it comes to the parks, the need here is not for two or three major improvements. The need is for dozens upon dozens of smaller but very important capital repair, maintenance, and improvement projects scattered throughout the vast array of parks, facilities, and roadways, and amenities, et cetera. So that's just some important context as well. This slide gives you a little bit more information we were able to get from the Parks Department, and we thank them for this. You know, typically the analysis of staffing is FTEs, and that's not a terrible way of looking at it, but I think a better way of looking at it is what were staffing levels, actual staffing levels, what did they look like during the midsummer period when obviously staffing level needs are greatest. And we see that there has, in fact, been about a 9% decline since 2009. Again, we're not suggesting that the 2009 level was optimal, but just going back for 5 years. Clearly, there's a connection that your audit department has talked about that we would certainly support, a connection between midsummer staffing levels and maintenance and repair backlogs. We really spent a lot of time in this report breaking down the debt service associated with each of these assets and laying it out for you. As I think you're aware, in the county budget, all of the county debt and debt service is in a separate non-departmental organizational unit, 9960. You don't see in your budget document the debt that's specifically associated with the parks versus the Marcus Center versus the Public Museum, et cetera. It's there if you want it, but it's not out there in your budget document. And we thought that this was a telling bit of information. When you look at the amount of debt service in 2012, actual debt service paid to support parks capital projects, that was about $16.3 million. In terms of context, the total property tax levy for operations that year was about $24 million. So we think that it's been flying under the radar screen that you are that you have a need to appropriate about three quarters as much to support debt service on these operations and capital improvements for these departments and these assets and institutions as you are on the operating side. And I'll tell you in just a second why we think that's important. Just wanted to cite the museum for a second, and I know Mr. Bernatz is on deck and will give you more details on their latest financial situation. Clearly, our assessment is, the operating challenges have not gone away, but they have clearly been alleviated by the agreement that you were able to reach last year. So if we had done this report a year or a year and a half ago, we may have cited the public museum as a huge red flag. We don't see that anymore in terms of short term. I think longer term, there are still some elements of the business model that clearly deserve your attention. We looked closely at the capital side, and I think that's where, at this point, because of the agreement you reached last year, that's where there's a bigger need. $27.7 million in capital repair and improvement needs identified over the next 5 years. Your commitment is for $4 million over 4 years. Obviously, there's a big gap there. I know the museum has been extremely diligent and successful in terms of raising private dollars to support some of those needs. And so, this is not a suggestion that that whole gap would need to be filled by the county, but I think it gives some context that there's needs both on the basic nuts and bolts repair and maintenance side, as well as a need for some improvements to exhibits and so on that's going to help with ticket sales and with earned revenue. The key question is, to what extent can private sector support fill that gap? And for us, at least, even if it does, a related question is, to the extent that private sector dollars are going to be needed to support publicly owned assets, what does that do in terms of the privately owned assets and their ability to raise resources from the same philanthropic community? Just for comparison's sake, and I know Mr. Matthews is in the audience today, the Marcus Center. And I think for the Marcus Center, we see, number one, a far more stable operating situation that cuts in operating support from the county over the years have been largely accommodated through greater earned revenues and efficiencies. Here from the Marcus Center, what we see is one very big need. The parking structure has outlived its useful life. There's a need for a new structure. There are several options on the table that would range from simply rebuilding and repairing the existing structure to, of course, trying to pursue the project that the Marcus Center has been talking about for the past couple of years of doing really a catalytic project, a new parking structure that would also have some development opportunities that could potentially enhance earned revenue to the point that after several years and after the potential debt would be paid off on this project, that there could be a further reductions or perhaps a weaning of county operating support if indeed that would come to fruition. So we bring this to your attention as sort of a contrast between two different county-owned assets that are sort of facing dissimilar set of needs. A few observations before moving on to the private side in terms of dedicated funding for capital versus operations. Again, I'm going to take great pains to, again, say that the Public Policy Forum is not pushing or suggesting that there needs to be consideration of an enhanced public funding mechanism. But it got us to thinking in doing this analysis that if you were going to do something new and different, would you want to look at the operating side versus the capital side? The operating side has been what has been most commonly talked about. we have some observations to share with you. Number one, when you look at what has happened, the county-owned entities, by and large, have been able to offset flat or reduced county operating support by boosting earned revenues and enhancing private donations and finding efficiencies. So arguably, if you were to look at doing something in terms of enhanced operating support, does that in any way squelch that type of innovation? Can't tell you whether it does or it doesn't, but what I can tell you is that it is on the capital side. If you're looking to do something on that side instead, I don't know that that argument would come out, because it's very difficult to innovate your way out of a leaky roof or a boiler that you're about to hear about that's going down. Basic nuts and bolts infrastructure, to the extent that you would want to look at some additional public sector support, you're arguably not going to see a negative impact in terms of creativity and innovation. I think we have observed that it is difficult to raise private funds for basic repair and upkeep of county-owned buildings. That's just a fact of life, that when the publicly owned assets are going to the philanthropic community, there is, generally speaking, going to be more excitement about donating funds to a new African and Plains exhibit at the zoo as opposed to fixing an HVAC system, as an example. Finally, I think a point can be made in terms of capital investment in county-owned facilities. You know, when you get into the discussion about do we need to do anything more on the operating side, you inevitably get into a discussion about things like salaries and benefits for the workers at the county departments or at the nonprofit organizations that administer several of the county assets. You don't get into that conversation as much when you talk about keeping buildings and facilities and structures in proper upkeep. So again, just a few observations as maybe you think about capital versus operating. Privately owned institutions, these are the six we looked at. I'm not going to go into our analyses of these. I will, however, share with you some broad observations in terms of looking at the roster of six. This one's not surprising. These organizations, of course, are more reliant on earned revenue because they are not obtaining much public sector support. Therefore, they're more susceptible to swings in the local economy. When the local economy isn't doing well, ticket sales, admissions fees are ostensibly also not going to do well, and private donations are going to be more difficult to come by. What does that mean? Well, one of the six, obviously, the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, is experiencing some substantial problems. The other five we looked at are getting by. They're okay. Where this hits them the most is in terms of their ability to build reserves and endowments. They have very limited capacity to do so because of the wide swings in their earned revenue, and their ability, much like yours, to take care of their basic nuts and bolts infrastructure needs. Again, their challenges are largely linked to low reserves and growing maintenance needs, not the type of circumstances that led the Public Museum and the War Memorial Center to come to you and need additional help on the operating side. Again, interesting that both types of entities are challenged to raise funds for basic infrastructure. There's a need for basic infrastructure support. The major sports and convention facilities, again, the three we looked at, the BMO Harris-Bradley Center, Miller Park, and the Wisconsin Center, we have write-ups on each of those. We're really not going into great detail, but really want to give our readers a sense for how their business models work and to what extent are they similar or dissimilar from the assets that you own and the privately owned cultural entertainment assets. I am going to just briefly touch on the Bradley Center. We are very clearly not taking a position on whether there should be public funding to support a new multi-purpose arena. However, we did have a few observations just in terms of digging into the BMO Harris-Bradley Center's finances. What was interesting to us is when you look at the plan, how are they going to get by until 2017? 2017 is when the lease agreement with the Bucks expires. That is the date that has been put out there by which there has to be a pretty good idea as to whether we are going to be pursuing a new arena. We can't tell you whether, in fact, the Bucks will leave if there is not the promise of a new arena by that time, but that's what's been put out there. And so you look at the Bradley Center's finances. We looked over the past 5 years. We see that there would have been some substantial operating deficits every year were it not for a $10 million contribution from state government. There were two $5 million grants that were appropriated by the state over the past 5 years to support maintenance and repair needs at the BMO Harris-Bradley Center. You look at now now how they're going to try to get by for the next 5 years. They have sold the naming rights to BMO Harris. There has been a push to provide roughly $20 million of support from major foundations and businesses. And you look at that, and the model really is not that unlike the model for any of the other assets or entities that we've been talking about here, that essentially you try to do the best that you can at the box office. To the extent that that's not able to put you over the top, you seek some public sector support and you seek some philanthropic support. And that is essentially the strategy that is being undertaken right now to keep the BMO Harris Bradley Center with a balanced budget until this decision is made. So you might ask yourself, well, what's wrong with continuing that model? The people in the room behind me are having to live with that model. And maybe there's nothing wrong with it, but there's one big exception that we do point to, and that is the fact that were the Bucks indeed to leave in 2017, that's when that business model really falls apart, because the Bucks are responsible for about 52% of the earned revenues at the BMO Harris Bradley Center. The deferred maintenance needs are not going to go away. So to keep that entity open for the Admirals and Marquette basketball and major concerts and so on would, we believe, be a monumental challenge. Again, does that mean we need to build a new arena? Does that mean that there may not be lots of options to look at that? It doesn't. But I think the point we're trying to make in this report is we need to start thinking about whether that building at 4th and State could actually survive if the Bucks were to leave, and what would we do in the case that we're not able to. So that's essentially a wrap-up of the point that we made there. Let me wrap up now, just summarizing our findings again. These are the five-year capital needs for the county-owned entities. We've identified $246 million over the next 5 years. We cannot tell you what percentage of that is going to come from privately raised funds, but when you look at it in comparison to the actual amount that was spent on capital over the previous 5 years, you begin to appreciate the very sizable gap that is there. I think a good news piece of this report, again, in large measure to the new agreements with the museum and the War Memorial Center / Art Museum, is that operating needs generally less acute for the county-owned entities than capital needs. Now, my guess is that many of the people around this table would dispute the fact that they're not serious, and so we're not looking to minimize the operating challenges. But generally speaking, we would submit to you that the capital needs probably trump the operating needs in terms of level of acuity for the county-owned entities. For the privately owned entities, 5 of the 6 in sound fiscal health. Again, the biggest concerns, reserves, ability to address basic maintenance and repairs. Private fundraising is going to be an issue. Without question, these assets have been very successful in raising money from our very generous philanthropic community to support several impressive big projects. The question is, going forward, can that continue to happen? What is the capacity of our philanthropic community? And again, how is that capacity impacted if it turns out that to fill that gap on the publicly owned side, we again have to turn very much to the private sector for that? Finally, this is a key finding. We can talk about capital in general, but I think there's really also a need to break it down into basic repairs and replacement versus capital improvements. And that's important when you think about this because, number one, you need to know what you're dealing with, but there are funding mechanisms. In our next report, we're going to talk about funding approaches used in other places, and there are certain types of approaches that are better suited to major capital improvements, other types of approaches that are better suited to essentially annual capital and operating needs. The danger here is that if you were to settle on one approach, you would help some entities, but you would not help others, depending on their needs. So that's why a reason that is important. I think another important point we make throughout the report, which I know you understand, is the very significant connection between capital improvements and the operating side. The zoo, as you know, is undergoing a master planning process. When you think about the zoo, their need for major capital improvements is very closely tied to their ability to meet the earned revenue objectives they have and not have to come to you and ask for more property tax levy support. So there's a very important connection when we think about capital versus operating. In many cases, the two are intertwined. And finally, I already spoke about the Bradley Center and Wisconsin Center facing similar challenges. Milwaukee County's public, private, arts, cultural, recreational activities clearly have substantial facility needs. We can't tell you. We don't envy you. You're the ones who have to decide whether the set of needs that is contained in this report exceeds the set of needs that you are facing elsewhere in county government, from your courthouse and safety building to your mental health complex, et cetera. And it is worthy of consideration to try to think about that, to not just isolate this set and say, here's what we're going to do, but to think about how it fits into the broader context in other areas of local government that will affect taxpayers, such as the sewage district. There are also immense capital needs. That being said, if indeed the objective here is to build upon this city's growing reputation in national circles as a city that strikes the right balance between sort of big city vervet and small town friendliness, then one could argue that that would be a rationale for doing something to enhance the ability of these facilities to meet their basic infrastructure needs and to be the types of quality facilities that I think this community has typically wanted. So I will conclude, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for that summary. The document itself is just a very interesting and detailed read, and our compliments on compiling that. It was a terrific job. Questions by committee members? Supervisor Borkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if I've ever used the word vervet. Right?
I haven't either before seeing this in a quote, Supervisor.
I'm going to have to add that to my repertoire. Mr. Chairman, committee members, I have some comments. I think this report is going to be much more important than we realize, and again, this is my opinion, but I don't think the mucky mucks of this community are going to let the Bucks go. Okay, that's plain and simple. They are going to do what it takes to keep the Bucks in town. As such, you know, there's going to be the political leverage of, okay, what else can we do for our community? And I know that with this report, we've got obviously a lot of needs. Milwaukee Public Schools has talked about enhancing their athletic fields and their things that they use. My point is that it's going to have to, if something's going to happen, it's going to have to be a package deal, because there's no way, in my mind, the community is going to support, let's say, a tax increase or whatever. So this report, in my eyes, is going to be important.
Thank you. Other questions by committee members? Supervisor Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your report here today, this overview of the detailed report. One thing that struck me, Mr. Henkin, was you briefly touched on Parks Department debt service. I think I should speak with you more later about this. That struck me. According to your report, it's 74% of their operating levy. Again, I think I know what that means, but I'd like to speak with you in detail about that. You know, parks are why I'm here, honestly. And it's what my neighborhood wanted me to come here and strive and fight for. So this is going to give me some more valuable tools to go back and talk to my constituents. Because if we're looking at situations such as Supervisor Borkowski touched on, what's going to happen there at 4th and State? I think there's another adjacent or nearby building around 4th and State, maybe 3rd and State, that we might be able to reclaim and turn it into a pedestrian mall, or I don't know what. I'm just thinking out loud here. But very good food for thought. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Hank.
Thank you. Other questions by committee members? Supervisor Stamper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very good report, Mr. Hankin.
Thank you.
When was the last time you did an analysis of the Milwaukee County Parks and Recreation and Cultures before?
We actually did an analysis in 2008. It wasn't as detailed. It was much broader, but we did do something 5 years ago. And that's also available on our website.
Are we in a better condition now, or were we in a better condition then?
It's a great question. you know, I think certainly on the capital side, the situation has grown worse. I think, and again, I'm not looking to blame anybody for that. And that's, I think, for Supervisor Haas, that's the debt service. That's the significance of that, is that it flies under the radar. But when you think about one of the reasons that you don't have the local resources to put into this, it's not just what you need to put in terms of property side to property tax to support the operations. It's what you're putting in to support capital, and that clearly isn't sufficient, and you don't have the capacity necessarily to borrow more. To the extent that you would want to borrow more, it's going to crowd out the operating budget issues as well, and it's going to make you even less able to support the operations the way you've been accustomed to doing so. So I think that has built over time. My sense is that the need is greater on the capital side. When I look at the you're going to hear from the Art Museum also in a second, I look at what you did for the War Memorial Center and the Art Museum, and our assessment is that's going to help considerably. But the question it raises for us is how does that impact your ability to now meet the needs of the other assets as well? So.
Okay. And you mentioned modeling after about four or five other cities. Were you talking about revenue streams? And can you tell me how, just give me an example, what else are they doing to raise funding for their park system besides just public and earned income?
There are several distinct approaches that we have observed that different communities use. Some use a short-term, time-limited sales tax, like Oklahoma City, that's focused on getting some major projects done. And again, that can bring great benefit. And that can even benefit those that are not the recipients of the major projects, because ostensibly it frees up philanthropic dollars to then serve other needs. Conversely, there are places like Allegheny County, which is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that has a general sales tax that supports a broad range of operating and capital needs, ranging from their libraries to their parks to their major institutions to also paying debt on new stadiums for the Steelers and the Pirates. You have a Cuyahoga County approach, which is Cleveland, which is much more time-limited and basic. It's seen as a supplement. The general premise there is we know we're not happy with the conditions of these assets. We're not ready to make a large-scale ongoing commitment of additional public dollars, but we do want to infuse public dollars in the short term into these assets, and so they did a temporary 30-cent per pack cigarette tax. So that's just examples of three different ways of going about doing this, each of which has its pros and cons, and each of which may or may not be the correct solution for Milwaukee.
Okay. Well, you know how they have tens or tax. Neighborhood improvement district funds, where they take a certain amount of money off your tax bill and put it into this pot so you can improve the neighborhood. Is something like done anywhere for parks?
We have seen local impact development fees. I can't guarantee you off the top of my head where they went for parks, but I know they've gone for cultural assets. So for various big projects, we've seen that. It's less commonly a way of say, just generally supporting a parks system as vast as ours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. If there are no further questions, I would simply comment, Mr. Hankin, that a number of my constituents and my colleagues, as we've had discussions about this, have found some difficulty in the notion of the business community seeming, in this case, in leading this effort, having substituted their judgment for the judgment of the voters made at the polls in 2008 regarding the use of sales tax money in that case. I think the specifics as to how that money would have been broken down would have been forthcoming had the state authorized the levying of that set. Of that amount. But, I mean, that said, it doesn't diminish in any sense the importance of the dialogue, I think, that needs to take place within our community, and the basis that you have provided for that dialogue, I think, is very important. But those of us who followed closely that effort back in 2008, when the public voted in its majority at the ballot box in an advisory referendum, many of us believe, and with good reason, because our lobbyists were reporting back to us, that the business community itself had derailed that effort in the legislature. So this is uncomfortable, to say the least. There's some degree of hypocrisy involved in it, and the idea of substituting the judgment of the business community for the people is first and foremost in my mind as I confront these things. But that said, this dialogue is important and will certainly proceed, and the value you've added to the discussion, I think, is unquestionable. And we thank you very much for that report.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. That item is informational, not requiring action. Item number two, please.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I'm going to make the motion that we receive and place on file. I think our colleagues should get this report also.
Fine. The motion before us is to receive and place on file. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Supervisors Rainey.
Aye.
Borkowski.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Stamper.
Aye.
Staskunas.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
There are 7 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to receive and place on file prevails.
Thank you. Item number 2, please.